A continuation visit, Mr. Nealand, this Saturday morning, the 1st of July, 72, after the break. After the break. We talked an hour, and then Faye took him out to see the filly. And now we're ready to talk a little bit more. Channel 1 over, and a continuation visit, Mr. Nealand, this Saturday morning, the 1st of July, 72. Channel 1 over, and a continued visit with Mr. Nealand this Saturday morning, 1st of July, 72.
Can you hear that? Yeah. He moved that front down in that way. Oh, he did. All she wanted to do was play with Mr. Nealand.
Well, we got acquainted with the equine world.
Mr. Nealand, that little thing was for you, wasn't she?
That is the cutest little thing. All life reminds me of where I am.
Yes, sir?
Going all the time.
Just ready to, for anything, ain't she?
Yeah, I'm interested in...
I gotta have a drink of water. Let me give you one.
Yeah. I came out there, and I heard the telephone ring, and I came back in here to answer it, and then I thought, well, you all be back in a minute.
Well, we were associating and trying to get the little horse to eat some grain, and she wasn't much interested. They're just all fed.
Yes.
They're just as holding as much as they can. Oh, yes. Well, I guess we... kind of discuss the way the world's going, but I'm depressed with the way it's going. I don't know. Have we always had worlds that were going down the hill? Is the glory that was Greece and the grandeur that was Rome upon us? Are we headed in that direction?
Yeah.
But who cares? Nobody.
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 They go along just like nothing's happening.
I'm getting mine. What are you writing about?
Yeah.
The future, tomorrow, the good of the world, the good of the nations, the good of the people, the local people, it doesn't matter a bit.
Well, you see, when you'd grown up, Mr. Nealand, they would tell you that you wanted to be public-spirited and do things for the good of the country.
Yes,
they don't do that now.
They don't do it anymore, and it worries me, it worries your wife, but the great trouble is with both of us, we see so many things that need to be done, and there isn't time enough to do them all.
Yeah.
I came into one of the offices, I had an entomology problem in my florist, and my old assistant was in there at the time visiting the entomologist too, and then he saw me come in, he said, "Here comes a man that works harder without pay than we do with pay." And I wouldn't be surprised, it might be so.
Okay.
I never find enough minutes in the day to do all I wish I could do.
Mr. Nealand, tell the guy what you told me about what your daddy told you when you found the cat out of the field.
Oh, yes.
About students,
your wife was telling about how we need resourcefulness now and ability to meet problems and do things. And I said, well, we came up that way. When I was 12, I remember one of our cows got out of the pasture into the open range, wooded country there. And so I was to look her up. Because Dad knew she was about to give birth to a calf. So I found her down in the woods about a half mile away, and there was a little calf that had just been born probably that night or a few hours before. And so I tried to get the cow, but the calf was lying down, and the cow wouldn't move away from the calf, you know, naturally, especially while I was there. So I went home and said, well, I found the cow and the calf, but I couldn't get the cow to leave the calf. Dad says, couldn't you find a way around that problem? So I did some thinking and I went back. It was more than nearly a mile. And I found that calf still lying there and the cow nearby. So I picked up the calf and carried it 100 yards and then I gave out and I put it down. And the got my breath, and I carried another 100 yards, and I got back to the pasture and gate, and got the thing, the cow, see, you move the calf inside, the cow will just follow. Little experiences that, but it's just an example of the many things you learn by doing, by being up against the problem and learning.
And you didn't have to run in, and you didn't. Your dad didn't teach you to run in and ask him the other time.
That's the important thing. I thought it was pretty harsh. I thought that was pretty hard. But then he's prepared me for a world that is hard.
Yeah. You know the trouble with that little filly, Mr. Nealon. You know, you just spend too much time out there. Just visiting.
The kid just captures you and like a child. And you hate to leave it.
Yeah.
Well, there always comes a time when there are other demands.
She can't see that little filly. She just pays attention to you all the time.
All the time. Yeah. At first, she's a little suspicious, but I found out where the flies were bothering her. Little bunch of flies on her back, and where she couldn't reach them. So I began to scratch him, and then I was afraid.
Yeah, is that right?
Well,
I don't know what you do with a animal like that. You got to handle them.
That animal has been handled plenty.
Yeah.
And maybe you have to taper off a little on it, just as we do with children. They have to make out on their own. They can't always be babies.
Well, she don't care, but she's had a lot of admirers, hasn't she?
Oh, yes, why wouldn't she? You know, in my view, it was kind of your 82 years, too. So frisky, quick.
Yeah. Oh, I'm telling you, she moves fast.
Yeah, yeah. I think I move fast, too, but I begin to doubt it.
Doubt it, yeah. Mr. Nealon, you remember we were talking about it one time out here, the people in the old days who had these woods cows, and 99 out of 100 couldn't change to the new way.
No, you know, that is true of farmers, it's true of workmen, it's true of PhD professors, and I have lots of respect for people of learning. I have suffered all my life because I haven't had any education to speak of. I'm an old man on the academic totem pole out there, but there is something more than just that PhD degree, and it may be more important even than a PhD degree. No one ever asked me wherever I went, did I have a degree in forestry? I got a problem. Got any answers?
Yeah.
And you better come up with something.
Well, let me tell you, this
pretty
quick. One of my neighbors over here, old man Will Guthrie, his wife, that's what he had, you know, for years and years and years.
What did he have?
And woods cows.
Oh, yeah, woods cows.
Yeah.
It's hard to change.
Well, now, that's what they get to. Now, they are getting to the place now, you see, the woods haven't got any grazing in them. And,
not much.
Not much. And they have to fertilize and everything, and then they have to feed them in the winter.
Yeah,
they're
not geared to that.
Uh-huh. Well, you know what they do when they come over here? You see, they don't have the pastures I have. They overgraze.
Oh, I know. That's from coast to coast. You know why there's no jackrabbits on that 2,000 trip? The first time I have counted from daylight till the sun was well up in a mile, as many as 40, 50, and 80 jackrabbits that were within sight in West Texas and getting into New Mexico, Arizona, and those places. Not one did I see, not even in the old hills of home where I used to walk them up all the time. The cattlemen have found out they eat grass, so they have poisoned them all. Now the coyotes and the eagles have to eat the lambs, because there are no more jackrabbits. And so now they did an airplane and shoot all the eagles. And so that's the point we're at now.
Miss Guthrie comes over here, and she sees my cows, and they have been in pretty good shape, Mr. Neal.
Oh, amazing.
They
so.
Just...
Plenty of pasture.
You look at them at the back end, you know, and they just...
Squared
yeah.
up.
Squared up. And
they
you know what Miss Guthrie says every time? She says, Mr. Miles, you keep them too fat. They can't calve. Well, you know, I haven't had a single bit of trouble with them calving.
No, there are a lot of superstitions among people.
But these wood cattle people.
Oh, plenty of them. I lived with them because we moved into the cattle country, and they didn't like us because we, they sold us a piece of land out in the tiny flat woods, and we started clearing it up and put a fence around it. Well, after the war, I came home because Dad's health failed and he had to go back to the hills where he could breathe. And I had a nice patch of turnips off to one corner of the yard.
Yeah.
There was a cow in there eating them all up. And I couldn't chase her out. She
yeah.
wouldn't find the gate. No.
Couldn't find the gate.
So I got my shotgun and burned her up in the rear end.
Yeah.
And she soared over the fence like a bird.
Yeah.
Just then the cattleman came around the corner through the woods and saw me.
Oh.
Oh, boy. And I was mad because my turnip patch looked like a wreck.
Yeah.
And so he says, is that the way you do it, stranger? I said, yeah, that's the way you do it. Well, he says, how's you build your fence up higher? I said, a man has a shotgun, he doesn't need a fence. And I turned around and walked back in the house. You know, I was getting kind of rough myself.
Yeah.
But you couldn't blame the man. I didn't hurt that cow except just stung her. I know how to use number 8 shot. We came up that way. I used to do that in my mules. I couldn't get them to come in to work. No, sir. Nose up in the air, tearing around my pasture, having a wonderful time. Couldn't get him to the barn. Hmm. Went back to the house and got my double-barrel shotgun, 40 yards, aimed a little beyond the rear, bing, bing. Into the barn, and by their manger, they stood quietly.
Oh?
Now, how did you aim that, Mr. Lee?
Yeah.
How'd you aim it?
I aimed it a little back of the posterior as they were dashing around, you know, so I didn't want to hit them in the eye.
Yeah.
So I knew.
So they just got the fringe up.
Yeah, there's a circle there, you know, about the circle in which, 40 yards in which the shot scattered. Maybe something like 8 feet.
Yeah.
And so I just stung them a little in the rear, you know.
Yeah.
And then,
and then they heard all that noise.
And they made that burned them, you know, in the rear end. So they found a way to in the barn and buy that little feed box so quick. But sometimes you have to learn how to go.
Mr. Nealon, how do you do all the things you do when you don't have the little old salary over there?
The little old what over there?
You're not on a salary, you see. You're not on the payroll.
Oh, no. No, if they paid for what I did out there in 16 years at day labor wages, let alone the thousands of miles I've driven my car and my expense, $25,000 wouldn't touch it.
How do you, I don't know how you keep it going.
Well, I made this mistake. When I retire, I said to myself, a man that's been on the public payroll all his life owes the public something.
Yeah.
You can overdo that in no time at all.
Oh, yeah.
So, I'm an unqualified man. We got a U.S. Forest Service. We got a State Forest Service. We got a School of Forestry. One of their graduates here 2 or 3 weeks ago came to me and said, we want you to go over to Putnam County. He's taking some graduate work here, but he works at the Putnam Pulp Mill.
Yeah.
And he said we want you to come over and show us why our hardwood plantings are not any doing anything good. Unqualified man, but they got three important forestry departments to give them advice, but they call on an unqualified man. And I went
an
over
hour.
There, didn't take me but an hour or two to tell them four things that they would have to do, then their trees would do all right.
What'd you tell them?
Well, I told them, first, you're not adapting your species to your soil. The second thing is you didn't properly clear your well-drained, strong soil that, so that you had to plant a white oak right by a hickory that's already 4 feet high.
Oh.
And that the older tree will submerge anything new. They're just like us people. We're going to survive no matter who we kill.
You mean they did that?
They did that. They didn't properly prepare. Then another thing, I told them they didn't mix the species. You don't want only just one species. Nature, from here to Texas, I've been around, from there to Canada, hardwoods are always grown in mixed stands under natural conditions. So in my report, I think I'll leave you a copy. I brought a copy along, not because you'd be interested, but because my style of writing and what I'm trying to say, a person versed in English, I would need critical comment. I don't want praise because I already think it's as good as I can do, but it may be that I could do better with a hint or two here and there.
Yeah.
And as I always say, I haven't had a critical comment yet.
No.
But I need it. Yeah, one.
Yeah.
Extension Forestry in Georgia mentioned that I could put my statistics in a little more effective way. But outside of that, he's a practical man. He meets practical problems. Poor fellow, he died here a year or two ago. So what I did out there, I had to do on my own. No planting stock available. I had to collect hickory nuts and white oak acorns and go clear to West Florida to get some seed and mix my species. When I planned it as a retirement project, I took it up to the head of the School of Forestry and I said, this is what I'm planning to do as a retirement project and hardwood research. I'd like to have your comments. He looked over my outline and said, no comment, very gruffly. Well, I said, does it sound like a sensible thing to do? Never heard of such a thing. See, that's what's the matter with corn mouth.
Yeah.
Something new. They just won't accept it because they don't know. If he told the truth, he said, I don't know whether it's good or bad. So finally, I couldn't get any comments anywhere here. And there's one mean thing about being an extension forester. The agriculture people care nothing about forestry. They weren't trained in that. The foresters care nothing about agriculture. And they don't know how to combine the two. And both have farm forestry projects, farm forestry responsibilities, but they'll have no part of it. So if the foresters don't approve what I say and do and write, the agriculturists won't accept it either, because the authorities are not back of them. See, that's where the great trouble is. So I'm caught between. But I'm struggling along, having a grand time. I'm finding out some things.
But what I'm thinking about, Miss Needle, how do you pay your bills?
Oh, I've got a very careful financial treasurer and secretary, and she sees to it that we save enough of our modest retirement for groceries and a trip to the West every year or two. So I am not accustomed to money. I never had any, so I know how to make out with less.
Well, you got a house there in town.
Yeah.
And you have to keep it up.
Yeah, unfortunately, I had painted and put a new roof on it, and that was a blow.
Well, you didn't do it yourself.
No. No, I didn't do that. You know, a good man is scared. My wife doesn't like me up under the eaves anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I kid her about that. But there's another thing about it. When you're that old, you're not quite as steady as you used to.
How'd you get the roof on?
I had to get it done. I went to my Cummer Lumber Company there and asked them for a reliable man that would be reasonable if they knew one, and they recommended the man that you put it on. I don't think it cost me. It was a shingle roof, composition shingle, you know, and that's as cheap as you can make it, but it lasted lasted 20 years, and
yeah.
So I said, I won't be around here 20 years, and so we had that put on. Seemed to me, I don't know, my wife keeps track of all the bills, or we wouldn't have any money, I guess, so it seemed to me around
$400.
$400? Yeah.
Well,
no, I could be wrong. It might be $600.
How long has it been?
How long? About a year ago, a little over.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you a story. One of my neighbors got into that and wanted the house covered, and they couldn't find any reliable man.
It's hard to find. I've had some I wouldn't have again on a bet.
They went down to Sears. And you know what Sears has? They have a whole lot of crews out. And they're all bloodsuckers.
Mm-hmm.
They charge, the old house wasn't any good.
Very small house.
Oh,
yeah, about half big. I don't know, I guess a good bit of surface. We figured around 26 squares. But nothing fancy.
Mm-hmm.
They charge them $2,000. You think anybody have better sense?
I'm going to ask the wife, and I can tell you exactly.
All
she
right.
has it all down in record. She keeps very accurate records.
But isn't that unbelievable? $2,000?
That's crazy. Reminds me of that cartoon in yesterday's paper. I don't know whether you look at it, Red Eye, the Indian chief in the Times Union, and he needed these CP tents painted, and the fellow was estimating. Well, he said, well, what are you going to charge me? Well, he said, let's see, 98 cents for paint and $300 for labor. And he said, $300 for labor? Yeah, he says, you know, I bought that cheap paint, so I'll have to paint it at least five or six times, paint it over five or six times. And the old chief says, have you been working for the government for a while?
You know,
costs don't matter with some people. They don't think of that.
Yeah. Well, the sad thing is that that's the way the business houses do it now.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of that. It's just a scandal
yeah.
the way they charge. Now, my fan... We don't have air conditioning, of course, and my fan petered out. There wasn't much wrong with it, so I went to the man that repairs fans and said I'd like to get this fixed. And I saw a sign on the desk in front, a minimum charge $2. I guess the first look is only $2. Anyway, I said, when can I call for it? Oh, he said about 10 days. It was 3 weeks before I got it. I called back, cost you 5 cents to park every day, a time you go there, except one time I walked next to my car and there was a nickel lying on the street. Got free parking that time. But anyway, the third time went $4 and 74 cents, 79 cents
yeah.
with a tax.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think in the Depression times that would have cost you more than maybe $1.20. But that's the way they add on now.
Yeah.
Everything is
well,
crazy.
Now, with all your trips, Mr. Nealon,
you could have gone ahead and bought a new fan cheaper than you got that old one.
Practically sold. Practically sold.
This one here.
That's an expensive one.
It's Japanese.
Huh?
It's Japanese.
Got what?
It's Japanese.
Oh, it's Japanese? Wonderful job. I never saw one as pleasant to listen to.
Yeah.
Of course, my hearing's not much.
No, it don't make any noise.
Hardly any noise. No.
And you see, it all comes apart, and you can put it in the sink.
You know, where do you, who handles that?
Well, the I got this one down at one of the fellas there in the Sony, who handles Sony equipment.
In town?
Ocala.
Oh, you know, I think Ocala is a better place, and so is Palatka.
Now, let me
tell you, those are the highest place on
the
earth.
Here's something else.
Beautiful.
Now, if I was doing it again, this is all I'd use. I wouldn't use any big ones.
Why have them bigger?
Well, you just sit up close to them, you can
get
see
the same thing there. And it costs
and
you
very,
much less.
Much less. Uh-huh. And it's very clear.
Yeah, very nice. My ears in it. People hear anything while I'm listening on these?
If you want them to.
Oh?
If you want them to.
Is
this will either cut it off or not?
Could you reduce it so that I would hear perfectly with this, but others it wouldn't interfere with their conversation or anything?
Well, you cut it clear off. The way it is now, if you put this in, it cuts this off. But if you want it on, you can turn it on.
Who makes those?
Huh?
Who makes those?
Well, you can get them anywhere.
Is it a certain company?
Oh, they all make them.
They all make them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it.
Well, it's old fashioned.
You see what you do? Well, you see, the television people don't do this very well. You've got to get the electronic people. They know more about it. The people don't know anything.
No, they won't sell. That's
all they do. Yeah, have a seat. Let me tell you, I had you in mind. I was going to show you. I was going to show you this. You see, all this equipment is cheap. See, this costs $100.
Mm-hmm. That's probably $400.
And this cost $15. And it depends on who you get them from, whether they're any good or not.
Oh.
You've got to buy them from somebody who knows what they are.
And can tell you how to handle it.
And tell you how to handle it, you see.
Well,
and this way, you see, you can listen to this, and there's no strain to you.
Well, the children gave us our television set. started out with radio and got the ball games that way and other things. But one time we always take off, and that's midnight from 6 to 7. Half the period is for state and local news, and the other half is Walter Cronkite, is national and world news.
Well, let me tell you now. You see, you know, a fella can save money and lose out.
Yeah.
Now, you see, I got a half a dozen of these things.
Those?
I got all sorts of things around here. I don't save money on them. If I see one that's a little better, I get it.
Oh, I see.
And you say, well, I'll do the other one. I just throw it away. I don't care. What's $100, you see?
Yeah.
Now, you can get one of these and put it on your same antenna.
Yeah. Cost you a lot less.
And with your thing here, you see, you're independent.
You know, there's such a thing as getting old. And we talked about people on the old time range, people who can't adjust the pasture. We get so we don't want to change anything. We just make out what we had. And when you reach my age, I imagine I'm 15 years older than you are. You know, you don't have too much more time. The old man with a sickle will be around any time. And I don't like investing more than necessary.
I've quit figuring it like that. You see, I don't make trips.
You don't.
I don't spend any money. There's nothing I do.
I
don't do anything costly.
I see.
Well, I don't figure this is a pleasure, Mr. Neely. This is what I work with.
Yeah, that's all right. I think you need that to keep up, and you do need some diversion. I get my diversion if I go on a trip. They say, don't you get tired driving 450 miles every day? I say, not a bit. Every mile is like a page in the interesting book, but you got to see what you're looking at.
Yeah.
And you were talking about a roadrunner a while ago. And there's antelope on the range, and there's birds, and I can tell you when you're going to see the fishtail flycatcher. I'm interested in such things.
Mm-hmm.
And the pinon jay ought to be showing up, and there will be one. So after you get acquainted with the country and all the cactus, why is it the cacti in the desert countries have the most beautiful flowers of anything? I have to always find a solution myself. I'm often wrong, I guess, or more than right. I say to myself, there's so few insects, they have to make a big show to attract any for pollination. Maybe that isn't the case at all.
Yeah. Mr. Nealon, I'm interested in your finances.
Oh, in my finances.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't see how you can pay your grocery bill as much as you travel.
Well, I'm careful.
I'm careful, too. But these old cars are breaking down all the time on me.
That's what gets me. They charge so much.
I could pay the gasoline, but the car breaks down.
Yeah, that's the trouble. But, you know, my Chevrolet is going on 3 years now. It's 3 years old.
Yeah.
Pretty quick. And I've driven it from here to the coast and back, and I've got about 36,000 or more miles on it, and I've gotten wonderful service out of that car.
Well, you're lucky. How much did your grocery bill cost?
Oh, I'd have to ask the wife. I don't know. We have guests 3 times a week for lunch, and that doubles our grocery bill. Younger people eat a good deal more than people of my age. And that all helps load the wife up. And she has so many outside, that telephone never stops ringing. What shall I do?
Oh, really?
Organizational work, garden club work. She had this short course in gardening. She originated that 35 years ago.
Yeah.
And Now someone else has been carrying it along, but this year the General Extension Division in the Siegel Building reneged in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then the university had to take it over. And Dr. Sam Smith is a good man, but he was unaccustomed to how to put such a thing on. So she had to do the whole thing pretty nearly. I guess I ran up 100 miles, taking her back and forth to give Dr. Smith the outlines of what had to be done and when,
yeah,
and what notices have to go out and what speakers and who's to introduce them. All those details fell to her.
Yeah.
And then you have your all her assistants that she supposed to help on it were all out of town that week. So you get into things like that, it'll kill you all.
Yeah, yeah. Wish you make you wish you was dead. You know?
Yeah. Then I tried to help out too, and she had exhibit material to take out, and I parked back. It was night meeting, and she doesn't see well. My wife is poor on vision, and if it's dark, she's liable to stumble and fall. And you know, she's about 82 or 80 now herself. I think I'm 2 years older. And so I parked back at the Siegel Building, away from where the loading zone was at night, and I got out. There was a ticket. It cost me $1 to help the university.
That's right.
You explained it to somebody, nobody ever paid any attention.
Yeah.
That you it cost you something to help the university.
Yeah.
Of course, I could have gotten this Shannon Smith and gotten him to call up and said that was a necessary help. And we want you to give that $1 back to the man who was helping us out.
Yeah.
But he was on his vacation. I think he'd had it for. So I said, well, it's just too much trouble. I could have called up the president, but he was already loaded with too much junk. And so I just said, oh, well.
Well, you see, I don't have any retirement to speak of.
Oh, well, I did.
And if I ever retire.
Yeah, but you better tend to that. My boss came to me about 10 years or so before I retired, and he says, look here, you're not going to have a cent when you retire. You better do something about it. I said, well, what will it cost me to pay back? And he said, $1,400. I didn't have $1,400, so I had to mortgage my house. And the banker came down, and he looked everything over. The porch was every bit as good as yours. He complained about the porch not being in good condition. Well, wife is particular, and we paid that off just as quick as it was possible to pay it off. And now I'm getting a modest retirement. Well, without that, I'd really be sunk. And some of my friends, they didn't do that, working with the university or other departments. And then they were suddenly taken, the same as I might be sometimes.
Yeah.
Of course, the wife won't get the same retirement, but she'll get some retirement. But you have to look to the future, and you better take care of that. Now, I'm not telling you how to run your business, but be sure that
you have protection
against the disaster that may strike.
Well, you see, what I'll have to do, if I retire, I'll just have to sell this place and live on that and give me a little money.
Delay that as long as you can.
Yeah.
Don't sell this place until you have to.
You know, I can't hardly keep it going when I'm working and drawing some pay.
Yeah. Well,
I don't make anything out of it.
No, but then, yes, you do too. I think you live 10 years longer. Because you have this place. Just think of the peace. I have hippies around there, and I have nothing but motorcycles roaring by.
Yeah.
All those little jitneys, little bugs, they get the most noise possible. You can't talk.
Mr. Nealon, let me tell you. You could have your... the television sets you have, you could fix it, to use this. But the simplest thing would be just to get another one.
Get a little one like that. Maybe we'll do that someday.
It's already got the connections there.
Yeah. Maybe we'll do that. That sounds practical to me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It does.
That's all we need.
Yeah.
We don't need to buy a great big box. It just gives you everything you need.
That's right. And then if you want to run both of them at the same time, you get a little booster.
Oh, I see.
And put out there. And it's also got something to keep them from jamming each other.
Oh, yeah, I see.
But you see, one of the Howard, you know, he's a good antenna man.
Howard.
Howard TV.
Where are they located?
I don't know where they are, but that's his name. And he knows, he's one of the few I ran into who knew anything about what he was doing.
Oh, I'll look for that name. You think
Howard.
He might be in the phone book?
Oh,
Howard.
Yeah. Howard TV.
Is it that the name
but
of
he don't know. He don't know anything about this little equipment here. But I can tell you about that.
But he's good on electronics.
Yeah, he's good.
Well, now and then we have something go wrong. Something blows out, tube or something.
Yeah.
Our television, and then they come and they really charge you $12 or whatever.
Yeah.
So,
let me tell you. You see, if you've got one of these little things, you can take it off and walk along with it.
Oh, yeah.
Take it down there and ask him to tell him to put a tube in it.
You don't have to make a house call.
No.
That's worth something too.
Well.
Yeah. There's always a better way.
If I had known this, that's to start with, that's what I had. But you know, I thought the bigger the bigger.
I don't think they had it in the time when I was buying.
Well, you don't know.
I didn't buy it. The children bought it. But I imagine this is more recent.
You don't know.
No, I don't know. It might be different.
Yeah.
But they're improving things all the time, and so maybe this is a new
option. They've had these a long time.
Have they, these little ones, this size?
Oh, yeah.
But maybe not with all the equipment and the
Now you're speculating.
Quality.
You're out of your field.
No, I'm just guessing that we do make progress. And 10 years ago, that might not have been as good as it is now.
Well, that's a good one now.
Yeah.
And especially with those earphones.
Well, thanks for your fine hospitality.
Oh, well, we enjoyed every minute.
We'll stick together no matter what.
Yeah. If I had known that 10 years ago, Mr. Newman, I never would have got these big ones. But I thought the bigger it was, the better it was.
Well, yes, I think I had the same idea.
You know what the television people will do. They find out what you think, and that's what they'll tell you.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's salesmanship. I was never any good at salesmanship.
Now, you see, the fella I found out this from, he's one of the brightest people I've run into.
Mm-hmm.
And he took an interest in me from some
yeah.
of the things I did,
mm-hmm.
and he just tells me things.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's worth something, too.
It's rare, ain't it?
Well, they say I'm crazy. My friends say to do so much for nothing.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it for nothing. There's a lot of information we need, and nobody is seeking the answers.
Yeah.
And after 16 years, well, this report, I'll run out there and
yes,
with you.
Yes.
And I'll tell you, there's one thing that doesn't apply to this annual report. I started that while I was still working, but in those days, extension, that's 30 years ago, extension was not permitted to do research. Now, extension is supposed to do research.
Yeah.
So on Saturdays and Sundays, I had the planting of hardwoods 10 years old that were showing up some important information.
Yeah.
But they gave me a piece of land, the university gave me the land that was in a cattle pasture where they tried out all kinds of grasses, and you can't plant deciduous trees in a centipede grass pasture where the grass eats them up in the land, so the first few years they were closed, gone. Well, I wrote a annual report each year and explained why the growth was slower than the most of the area than it normally would be because of the grass. Well, the provost then, you have them meet the previous provost, I can't think of the name anymore, the one. He wrote me a mean letter. He said the whole thing was poorly advised anyway, how would he know? And he said, never heard such a hard luck story. He was just looking for something to dig. So I wrote him a letter in reply to that, explaining why things were the way they were. And I cleared it with my director in the extension place. He said, yeah, that's all right to send him. Because he didn't show up too well under my very politely worded letter explaining. He sold that area and bulldozed out everything I had done. And some of the members on the board said that was not right. And the members of his board. But he prevailed. Willard something. I can't read his last name. Fifield.
Yes.
Well, I got back at him in this report. In the front, I showed myself with my former assistant standing there by one of the tulip poplars, a high-value forest tree. And it was a sand, pretty wet land, too. And one corner that they didn't build it out, a small corner, had a few trees left in it. And I measured one of those 100 feet tall and 15-inch diameter in 30 years. That tulip poplar tree up in Pennsylvania with a shorter season, colder weather, would require 50 years to reach that diameter. But anyway, I got my picture there, and all I said was through an unfortunate change in land use, the entire thing was bulldozed out, that this is one of the few remaining trees, a beautiful tree, a long, clear stem. The old timers, they knew the Fifield, of course, was quick and going to all the work. And I'm glad he has. That was mean as he was.
Well, Mr. Nealon, we used to cut those big old beautiful tulip poplars up there and saw them up for wood for the fireplace.
Oh, it's a shame.
Isn't that a shame?
You had what state?
Tennessee.
We had a man come down here to work at the university. And he had to build a new house. He made a moderate income. And I was surprised. His dad from Kentucky sent him a carload of tulip poplar lumber because he wanted him to have good lumber for his house.
How about that?
You know, you're right. It is a valuable tree.
Yeah. And beautiful.
Beautiful tree, too. Yeah.
Beautiful.
I have it in my hardwood plant. It's 16 years. Some of them are up there 70 feet high.
Oh, really?
The cottonwood, oh boy. 5 years. The average height 52 feet on a 4x4 spacing.
Down here?
In my planting.
I ought to see that planting.
Oh, I've got to take you out.
Well, you sure might.
I'm the only one of your friends that's never seen it.
Well, no, the school of forestry people won't admit there's anything there.
Yeah.
I got one on, though. I finally found out that the U.S. Forest Service at Stoneville, Mississippi, has got a hardwood research project there. I didn't know that. I found it out by accident. So I sent them a copy of my report. That's been 4 or 5 years ago. He said, what am I reporting? I need some critical comments. It's inconsequential. And what am I failing to report on that is important enough to include? And the Chief Forester wrote right back and said, that's an amazing undertaking. Very worthwhile. It can lead our scientists into new areas of research, and I hope I can get off to see it. And keep sending us your reports because we're doing some work along similar lines. We want to compare notes. Now, there's the only encouragement I've had to date.
The only encouragement.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, forget it. My successor, State Forester, Coulter was one of the worst people, unprincipled, unethical I ever got associated with. But he heard too many people talking about my planting, so he came down to see it here about a year ago, and he made my successor. He doesn't care anything. He threw everything away I ever did as soon as he got in my office. Got rid of my name and any of my former assistants. He said, sorry he did that. The forest is a continuing thing, and your project should be continued if you started. But he was against anything I ever did. He never does anything. The only thing he does is collect his salary, that's all. He was given the job with a master's degree, provided he'd get a doctorate, which he promised to do. That's 16 years ago, he never did anything. Oh, and so he had to go out there with the state forester and look it over, and all he did was filled around, told stories, pretended there was nothing there to be seen. That's the kind of opposition you have. But I don't care. I know what's out there, and I know what's good, and I know what is good, and where nothing is known. Sometimes the mistakes are as valuable as the successes.
Sure.
You have to know what won't work. As Edison told one of his assistants when he told him, don't you get discouraged at all the failures you have? He says, not a bit, son. We've got to know what won't work as well as what will work.
That's right.
And he's a practical man, and he was working in the field where nothing is known. Nothing absolutely has ever been done with hardwoods in Florida, and we have 3 million acres of them, all cut to pieces.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, maybe it's necessary to see, is it practical to plant them? All the forests is all things. The forests, the hardwoods, they grow so slow.
Yeah.
I said, how would you know? Do you ever find any? No, I always thought so. Well, I said, don't tell people what you think. Tell them what you know. And so we're finding out some things there. I'll bring the report in.
You've got something out here.
Went over around 900 and the end of the visit, Mr. Neeland, this Saturday morning, the 1st of July, 72. Channel 1 over around 900, the end of the visit, Mr. Neeland, this Saturday morning, the 1st of July, 72. Channel 1 over around 900 and the end of the visit, Mr. Neeland, this Saturday morning, the 1st of July, 72.